Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
People don't like to hear the truth all the time. You know, people ask you questions, but they don't actually necessarily want to hear the answers.
Love him.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Canzano, what's going on, man?
He's dead sexy.
I think he does a damn good job.
I'm going to be rooting for this young Portland team, which, you know, is a terrific team. You guys just have a terrific nucleus.
You pay attention to detail. That's why you're so successful.
I just think he's honest. Straightforward and to the point.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I'm really glad to see that someone who speaks their mind is not afraid to tell it how it is.
He's a smart guy. That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man.
I let my mother listen to him.
Hate him.
You don't want to get nobody a second chance.
Trump. To represent that as some sort of subterfuge by John Canzano, I would have expected far better.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
He was rude, crude, and wrong.
Love to hate him.
Yo, John, I can't stand you. I can't stand you, but I come back every day to listen to the show.
Bald faith truth teller.
Who is he to judge?
Well, he can raise your eyebrows a lot.
I was angry. He just got my feathers that day big time.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
I like living in Portland. I guess I don't technically live in Portland. I live in the suburbs of Portland, but I like living here. I've got friends who live out of state who all the time ask me, what is it that you love so much about being there? You've had chances to lead there. I had the Seattle Times offer me a job a couple of times. The Wall Street Journal, I talked with them once upon a time. But yes, I've stayed in Portland. Why have I stayed here? Well, I've stayed here because I've been other places. This is the sixth stop I've made, at least in newspapers. And obviously, I never thought I'd be on radio. And here I am 10 years later hosting a radio show. And I had a chance to go to the Orange County Register not too long ago. And what they were offering was not just a newspaper column at the Orange County Register. It was also the ability to host a radio show on the affiliate of the Anaheim Angels. That was the affiliate. And I talked to them, and I seriously considered it. And just from a professional standpoint, certainly the Southern California and the Los Angeles market's a bigger market. But I left a bigger market in the Bay Area to come here. So it's not all about market size for me. It's about the relationship that I have with you, the listener, the reader. I feel connected to you. We don't always agree, but I'm connected to you in a way that is authentic. It's real. There's a dialogue that happens. There's a give and take that happens. I know you're engaged. I know you care about the teams in this area in ways that maybe people in other areas don't care or embrace the teams. And certainly in the Bay Area, I covered the Niners and the Raiders. I don't think people are as engaged with the Niners and the Raiders as they are, or the Giants or the A's as they are here in Portland with the Trailblazers or Duck fans statewide. Listening here in Portland on 102.9 or 750 The Game, or on the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Network down in Eugene on Fox Sports Eugene. That's 1050 AM and 95.7 FM. You love your Ducks and Beaver fans. You love the Beavers. You love baseball. You love basketball. You love football. You're engaged. You care. And that's not unique. I covered Indiana basketball and Notre Dame football, and those fans, they love their sports too. They love their teams. But I found over time that it's not a grass is greener thing or whatever. People always say that or whatever. To me, it was just, can I duplicate what I'm doing here? The fun I'm having here, certainly the money I'm making here, certainly the lifestyle I have here, the friends. But you know what else? It's just like driving in and looking and taking in the scenery, the lack of traffic. You think you have traffic, you don't. It's the lifestyle. It's you. It's the relationship. It's the ability to look outside and see green trees and to raise kids and a family in a place where I feel good about the community and I feel good about the people. So, yes, we have honest discussions. And so today we're going to have one of those honest discussions. All right. So something happened the other night that we got to deal with, that we got to talk about. And, you know, All right. So something happened the other night that we have to talk about, that we need to deal with. So the Trailblazers in the draft went out and got a player that I really like. Zach Collins, front court player, young player out of Gonzaga, who I wrote, I think, might have a chance to be the best player in the draft. I know you think I'm crazy for saying that. I know that at least nine other general managers would think I'm crazy, but I think he has a chance to be the best player in the draft. He has tremendous upside. He's long. I watched him at Gonzaga all season long. I watched him in the Final Four and in the national championship game. And, of course, he was in foul trouble. But when he was on the court, Gonzaga was better for it. Now, this is a player who didn't start for Gonzaga last year. And yet, the Blazers made the number 10 pick in the draft. Neil Olshey came out after making this pick and just spoke so, obviously, he was so enamored with Zach Collins. And in fact, talking about the moment he knew that the Blazers wanted Zach Collins or had to have Zach Collins. Listen.
I did. I was laughing. Bill Branch and I went to the game at the University of Portland, and he trailed a break, banged down a three, and then he caught the ball on the left block, got double teamed, threw a behind the back, no look pass to Tilly. And I said, okay, Billy, we can go home. We're done. He's a top 10 pick. And, you know, we knew right then. And then, you just realize he's a tough competitor. And one of the things I'm really happy with is we got two of the toughest guys in this draft.
All right, so there's Neil Olshey, the Blazers GM, talking about, you know, getting Zach Collins. And, of course, Zach Collins is going to love to hear that. And Zach Collins, who appeared in Portland on 102.9 and 750 The Game, 9 to noon with Justin and Devon, was asked about playing and competing with Yusuf Nurkic in the front court in Portland, and this was Collins' response to that.
Oh man, I'm ecstatic. I mean, anytime you can join, you know, another big that's already a great player in the NBA, and you know, my plan is to come in there and try to, you know, compete with them and try to earn a spot alongside to him. And I know I'm going to learn a lot from him, and you know what he's been through in his first years in the league. And you know, I know he's probably going to be one of those vets that, you know, teaches me a lot, so I'm looking forward to that.
All right, there's Zach Collins, again, speaking with Justin and Devon in Portland on 102.9 The Game and 750 The Game, giving a great interview in which he talked about, you know, his likes of music and his answers to questions on draft night and how hard was it to leave Gonzaga after one season and how that experience shaped him. But it all got me thinking about something maybe lost on Neil Olshey and Zach Collins. It got me thinking about Myers Leonard, because in Neil Olshey's excitement in talking about the skill set of Zach Collins, or how bad he wanted Zach Collins, or the fact that they couldn't get him in for a workout because they held the 15, 20, and 26 picks.
We had no shot of getting him in. There was no way he was going to be there at 15. And I think we got lucky that he got to 10. You know, quite honestly, I think some transactions that happened tonight changed the upper part of the middle part of the lottery. And then Sacramento had expectations, and they had what they wanted to accomplish, you know, in the draft, and it met up with ours. And we were lucky to move up and get him.
So what I hear from Neil Olshey in so many ways, and what I see from this organization, is that they're moving on from Myers Leonard, despite the fact that they gave him $41 million last summer. So a year later, and $41 million contract later, Neil Olshey is going, nah, that's not our guy anymore. Well, coming up here at 12:30, you're going to hear from Myers Leonard in the first interview that he has done after the drafting of Zach Collins. He's going to talk about Zach Collins. He's going to talk about, I want to know what his reaction was when he heard the news, when he found out that the Blazers were taking another big man. Myers Leonard's down in Los Angeles trying to work on his game, trying to figure out where his spot is with his team. And a year later, $41 million contract later, the organization seemingly picks up and decides, you know what, we like the skill set of Zach Collins so much, we're going to draft a player that's redundant at that position.
He's a big-time rim protector. He's a great one-on-one defender. He's a big-time post defender. He can really pass it. It was a great opportunity to move up and get the kind of a guy you can't get in the middle of the draft.
All right, and I agree with Neil Olshey, and I'm on record. I think the Blazers had a great draft. I love both of their draft picks. I love the fact that they got tough guys. Yeah, and I love the fact that they got competitors. And I also think if you are married to the idea that you're going to go with these small guards that are not defensive-minded, C.J. McCollum, I love your offensive game, but you are not a great defender. Damian Lillard, same thing. You're a nice offensive player. You are not a defender. If you're going to play with those two guys, if you're going to live and die with those two guys, you've got to have big bodies behind him. And so I like the idea of Yusuf Nurkic and Zach Collins even being on the floor together at the same time. I like the length. I like the shot-blocking ability. I like the physicality behind them. So I like this. But it just got me thinking, like, how is all of this going to fit with Myers-Leonard? And let's not be quick to give Neil Olshey a pass. I hear a lot of people banging on Neil Olshey for the draft pick. I'm not upset about the draft pick. I'm upset at the idea that the Blazers, just 11 months after committing all that money to Myers-Leonard and saying, you're our guy, we believe in you, that they are quickly saying, no, you're not our guy anymore, we like this other guy better. Is that just sports, or is this an organization that's making it up as it goes along? Because to me, if you have a plan, and we can go back to Neil Olshey's plan A, plan B, plan C, I don't know what plan they're on anymore, but if you've got a plan, then you had better know what you're doing and how to get from spot A to spot Z. And I say all the time, there are two ways to get to the top of a tree. You can climb that tree, or you can plant a seed and you can sit on the ground and wait. And Neil Olshey looked like he was climbing for a couple of off seasons. And then last off season, he fell out of the tree. Now he's trying to plant seeds and grow. And I'm looking over at this other tree that's got Evan Turner on it and Myers Leonard on it. And I'm going, you know, what is he doing and what is he thinking? Because I go back to just last July, and Neil Olshey's talking about goals for Myers Leonard and, you know, why he believes in Myers Leonard. And
I think when Myers' shoulder gets healthy, he's just growing into being a man. You know, there's such a thing as, there's only so much the weight room can do, and then you age into man strength. And we see this around the league. Look at some of the bigs that got deals this summer. They were late bloomers. Bigs take longer to develop. But a lot of it is the physicality that you just can't do as much with them, because they're not fully formed the way that maybe a guard would be.
Didn't he just draft, though, another player in that same mold that, hey, Zach Collins is going to take some time? And again, I like the draft. I like it in a vacuum. I'm looking bigger picture, though, and I'm a little confused on what is the plan? Why, if you're always looking to upgrade in the draft, why commit $41 million to Myers Leonard last summer? And how the heck are you going to recover from that? And by the way, is there any shot in hell that you bring Myers Leonard into camp and let him compete with Zach Collins? Or do you have to move Myers Leonard this summer and that $41 million contract? And I tweeted after the draft went down that I love the draft. I also tweeted, you got to move Myers Leonard. That becomes incumbent. You cannot bring him in and allow him to beat out Zach Collins, or you can't bring him in and let Zach Collins beat him out, and you've damaged your own trade asset. It's a real problem. It's one that the Blazers have created themselves, and I know that, you know, look, they went into this Plumlee-Nurkic deal, and they made a nice trade with Plumlee and Nurkic. They got a player who they're excited about. I'm not yet sold like some of you that he is going to be the forever center in Portland, but I'm excited about seeing if he can do it. But I'm also confused about what it is Neil Olshey did last summer and whether or not the organization will ever be able to overcome it. You could tweet at me at John Canzano BFT. Tell me how you stand on that. We'll also talk to Myers Leonard, and you'll hear it in his words coming up as the Blazers big man talks about possibly being replaced. For those of you who are looking for like an athletic wing player, I get it. I'd love it. When you say athletic wing player, for some reason in my mind, I see Rudy Gay. And I see, oh, they're looking for that kind of player, a player who can be a difference maker on the wing and complement C.J. McCollum and Damian Lillard, and I get the mentality there. But for where the Blazers were drafting in this draft, if you can't look at them giving up 15 and 20 to get number 10 and get a player they really like, who they may think is, hey, it's the best possible player that we could have had, and it's a guy we maybe shouldn't have belonged at even number 10, which I agree with all of that. If you don't see that as trading 2 1-carat diamonds for a 2-carat diamond, and you don't understand why that's a good trade and a good move for the Blazers, then I can't help you. This organization has struggled with continuity. It's struggled with momentum. It has struggled with, hey, this is our plan. Let's stick with it. You can knock the Blazers on all of those things because they pick a horse, they cross the river, they pick a new horse, they cross the river back. And it feels like we're in the same spot as we began in years ago. It's all true. But I think if you are the Blazers, you have to be damn near perfect on draft day if you're going to matter in this league, because free agency is just not available to you, and you've got to make smart trades. So now I believe it's incumbent upon Neil Olshey to make a smart trade with Evan Turner, possibly Alan Crabb. Certainly Myers Leonard would be a player I think the Blazers would love to get out from under right now. But again, before we blame Myers Leonard for that, and I don't blame him. I don't blame him a bit. If I put a $41 million contract in front of you and it, for a job that I knew that you would struggle to do, I'm not going to be mad at you for accepting it. It's absurd. And for those of you on Twitter who are telling Myers Leonard to die or to go away or I can't wait for you to be traded, get a life. You're the same people who are on Twitter blowing me up with 8 straight messages, and I'm looking at you going, oh, man, what's missing in your life that you got to send me 8 straight tweets that you're angry about something I wrote? Really? Look, you want to have a conversation about it, let's have a conversation about it. But don't blame the guy who got the contract put in front of him for signing the contract. It's absurd. Of course Myers Leonard was going to take the money. Of course the Blazers panicked last summer. Of course, you know, Neil Olshey was going, okay, I can't come out of this summer empty-handed. I just should re-sign my own guys. But he put the franchise in a bad position by giving Evan Turner money that he didn't deserve, by paying too much for Myers Leonard and locking up the Blazers in a bad position there. And frankly, he should have let Brooklyn have Alan Crabb for the money that Crabb was commanding. The Blazers would have been better off with that cap space and the ability to make a lopsided trade and take a player back that they could really value. But they panicked. So be mad at Neil Olshey. Be mad at Paul Allen. Be mad at Terry Stotts. It's Terry Stotts' job to get something out of Myers Leonard and get something out of Alan Crabb and Evan Turner. And if he's not doing a good enough job of that, be mad at the coach. But I'm not going to begrudge Evan Turner or Alan Crabb or Myers Leonard for taking the deal that was put in front of them. The big picture, though, I got a problem with that. If you do as well, tweet at me at John Canzano BFT and tell me, do you believe that the Blazers can find a way out of this? Or are they just guessing? Myers Leonard's coming up. You're going to hear from him and hear it in his words. How did he feel when the Blazers picked Zach Collins in the first round? He's down in L.A. He's working out. He's got a new workout guy. He's going to tell you all about that. But Myers Leonard, Blazers big man, is next.
Turner dribbles right. Now double team to Leonard. Down the lane he comes and dunks it. Boom, chakalaka.
John Canzano, BFT.
Turner dribbles right. Now double team to Leonard. Down the lane he comes and dunks it. Boom, chakalaka. Ooh, that brought oohs and ahs even from the Oracle crowd.
Now, I hope you're enjoying this beautiful Portland weather. I pointed out all the reasons why I love Portland. I think it's a great place to raise family, fall in love, have kids, host a radio show. It's all of those things. What is it to you? Tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. Tell me why you live here. You have a choice. Nobody put a gun on you, brought you to Portland, and said, you must stay here. You have a choice on where you want to live. Why is it here? Is it just family tradition? Is it something else? I used to have that discussion all the time with my grandfather. Like, you know, here we talk about Italian families coming over from Italy and settling on the East Coast, and he decides one day he's going to go west, and he hops on a train and makes his way to California, and he says, this is where I want to have a family. This is where I want to bring my wife and kids, and when I have a wife and kids someday. And so he does that. And I know when he's in his 90s, years later, we used to have this discussion, and he would tell me, you know, hey, I'm responsible for this. I'm responsible for bringing you west. And he's right. In fact, I don't think my parents would have met had he not come west, so I wouldn't exist. So I should have pointed that out to him. But anyway, why do you live here? What is it about Portland that brought you here? Is it the weather? Is it something else? You tell me. Tweet it to me. At John Canzano BFT on Twitter. You can also go to the Bald Face Truth Facebook page if you'd like. You could post there and tell me what it is about Portland that keeps you here. All right, without further ado, I talked about the Blazers drafting Zach Collins out of Gonzaga and why I liked it in the opening segment of the show, and I've been on record since Thursday that I think this is a good draft pick, so don't tweet nonsense at me saying, oh, you bagged on the guy. I think Zach Collins is a good draft pick. I also think it creates a problem for the Blazers and a real head-scratcher when you look at Myers Leonard's presence on this team. And so now Myers Leonard joins us. Where are you right now? Are you in Southern California, Myers Leonard?
Ellie and I went back to Portland for the weekend, quick trip, and I'm headed to pick up Bella because she's, you know, got the whole cancer deal going on and whatnot, so we had to leave her with the doctor.
For people who don't know, Myers' dog Bella has cancer, and so how are you? That's like a family member, and I know I have a sister who's got dogs, and she doesn't have kids, and they're like her children. So how are you dealing with that?
Initially, it was incredibly difficult. I mean, like you said, she's like family. She's like, you know, we haven't had kids yet, and she's like a daughter. So
yeah,
when it happened, it was very hard, and not to mention, I'm all about my family and taking care of the people or things I love. So it was very difficult at first, but I'm slowly allowing myself to come to the realization that we're probably buying time.
Yeah.
I'm still incredibly optimistic, and Bella loves her life. She's not in any pain, and I hope she can beat it. But we'll see. The first round of chemo didn't work, and then when we got to LA, we started a new type of chemo where she goes in for a pill and a shot every 10 days, and they haven't found cancer for about a month and a half or so now. So it looks good right now, but we just have to keep giving her good vibes and keep moving forward. So
how'd you find out about it? I mean, was it something you noticed about how she was acting, or was it?
It was really kind of strange. She was drinking a lot of water, but we didn't really think anything about it. And then, not to get into too much detail, but she actually was sitting next to us on the couch, and she kind of, she peed. I mean, she peed all over the place. And we're like, okay, this is really weird. So we took her in for just a urine sample. Maybe she had an infection or something, and she couldn't hold her bladder. Came back and they're like, no, there's nothing in there. So the very next night, the team left and we went to Minnesota, and my wife was at home by herself, and Bella did it again. And I was like, okay, that's very strange. Take her in tomorrow morning, and have blood work done. So they did blood work, and it was a little bizarre and probably lucky for me that the game in Minnesota ended up getting canceled. But Ellie called me, I remember specifically, it was almost an hour on the clock until game time, and they were still kind of up in the air about if we're going to play or not. And she called me on FaceTime, so I put her on my headphones, and she was bawling.
Yeah.
And that's not like Ellie. Honestly, I'm more emotional than she is most times. And she said, Myers, they think Bella's got stage 3 kidney failure, because what had happened was her body was trying to fight the cancer. And so her calcium levels and her creatinine levels and her kidneys were really high, which was causing the urination stuff. Anyway, went through that. She did IVs for 4 straight days. They had to shave her legs and the whole deal. And, they said her kidney levels are back to normal. That's great. But then we took her to a specialist and they said, well, her lymph nodes are a little swollen. We thought, okay, maybe she's fighting infections. And that's her body's way of trying to pass it. But they did a lymph biopsy, and we found out she had lymphoma. So from that day on, we started chemo. And for now, she's good. She loves it here. You know, she loves her life. She loves the sun, which is weird for a husky. But
yeah,
she's enjoying everything. So we're good. We're good. You know, taking it week by week.
People forget that, like, everybody sees you play basketball or they see other players, and they forget, A, that you have families, B, that you've got pets, and C, that, like, you're normal people. Like, I think that for people hearing this story, it'll be good for people to hear, like, okay, this is like a normal story, because you hear people who have, you know, I have a sister who just lost a dog, and it's like you lose a family member, and you know, so I think it's good for people to hear you talking like this amid the basketball and everything else.
Sure, no question, and I do my best at all times to just try to act like a normal guy. Now, I'm 7 foot. I play in the NBA, all these things. I'm a very noticeable person.
Yeah.
But, you know, even if someone comes up and my wife and I are having, you know, an intimate dinner, or, you know, or I'm with my family, I always try to be as kind as possible and just show people I'm just a regular dude that has been blessed, and I'm playing in the NBA. I love what I do, and but I try to let people know that, so. You know what? My emotions are real, and I don't have any reason to hide those. So
Myers Leonard is our guest, Blazers post player. You watch the draft. You see them select a player in the first round, and Zach Collins, who everybody goes right away. Hey, is that taking minutes? Does that mean the franchise is giving up on Myers? What do you think when you see a player drafted like that?
You know what? I have to be completely honest. I've been working all day long, almost every day, Monday through Friday, and most times Saturday, at least one workout. So I was so exhausted from my workouts that I slept for about 3 hours straight through the draft. And then, of course, you know, you wake up and, you know, a couple buddies have texted me and such and said, well, what do you think? And I said, well, first of all, I don't really know who he is. And second of all, I immediately went to how I'm feeling right now, and that's the best I've felt in a very, very long time, physically, and with my workouts. You know, I've talked about, you know, last summer I thought I was in a really good place coming off the injury and everything, but I just didn't know everything that was going to entail and being able to get back in shape and be able to, you know, bang with NBA players, et cetera. But right now it's been just an unbelievable 3 weeks. I'm learning so much. The guy I'm working with loves to get his guys better, and I really think he's kind of, I mean, for all of his guys, he takes it as a challenge. He watches all your shots, all of your film, studies up on you prior to you even coming. So he's been awesome. My strength conditioning is great. My physical therapy with my back and everything I had at the end of the season that I tried to hide a little bit because I was just trying to tough it out and do what I could for the team. So, you know what, I'm in a good spot right now, and it'll just come down to who plays well. So I'm just working. That's it, man. All day, almost every day.
How did you find how do you find like that team that you put together with strength and conditioning and your workout guy and everything?
You know what? I've stayed in Portland the past few years, and which has been good. I traveled last summer around Portland in my Jeep and with Bella, and it was really cool. You know, I think it's important to kind of understand where you're playing and understand the culture and everything. Because again, I'm just a normal guy, really. But I thought to myself, man, I know deep down, and I'm not just saying this because, you know, I don't want people to give up on me or whatever. It's because I know deep down I have so much more to offer. And at times it's frustrating. At times it's upsetting. At times it makes me mad. Just because I'm sitting here and, I'll get home from a game or I'll get home to practice or I'll be talking to my wife and I'm like, gosh, I just know I have so much more that I can give. And so I it's funny, actually. I went down to All-Star this year and I was thinking a lot. And the season wasn't going that well. And I actually met up with Wes Matthews. Now, Wes and I weren't necessarily really, really close when I was in Portland, but the year before he left, we started to get a little closer. And ever since, we've stayed in contact and such. And so we had lunch, and then I actually ended up flying with him to Dallas, and he was just kind of talking to me and saying, you know, just trying to be positive with me. You know, you're young, keep working, all these things. And he's asking me what I was doing for the summer. And I said, you know what, I'm not really sure. And that kind of struck me like, man, I should really try to change what I do this summer and see how it works. So Ellie and I started working on it, talked to my agent, did some research, and put together this team essentially of people who are working with me you know, again, Monday through Friday, sometimes Saturday. And honestly, the first couple weeks I was in there 7 days. So it's been awesome, man. It really has. It's been so freeing for my mind to get up at 6 a.m., be on the court by 7:30 or 8, depending on scheduling, work out for an hour and a half, 2 hours, sometimes a little more. Then I go home, eat, do my, then I go to physical therapy. Then I come home, I eat again. Then I go and lift for an hour and a half. Then I come home. Most of the time I'm exhausted. I take a nap and then I get up and, you know, try to text my guy. Hey, what can I do better? What did you see today? It's just, everything's been awesome, man. And I'm in a good place right now.
Myers Leonard, our guest, here on the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. The summer before, you didn't have the ball in your hands a lot because of injuries and rehabbing. You're really working on strength and flexibility and range of motion and all those things, but you don't have a basketball in your hands when you're doing that stuff. How does that translate to being a basketball player? Do you need the ball in your hands in the off season?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, it'd be like, I don't even know what to describe it as. You know, I couldn't shoot, if I remember correctly, or put a ball in my hand, for that matter, for 5 months, I think. It was something in that range. And for me, I can admit I'm a big-time confidence player, rhythm guy, you know, like when things are, especially when it comes to my workouts, all dialed in and, you know, I'm feeling good about it. And not touching a ball for that long is very strange. You know, you kind of forget maybe little parts of your shot routine, both mentally and physically, from when you were really feeling good last. And so I've just, you know, like I said, the guy I'm working with, Drew Hamlin, when I first got there, he said to me, look, when I am going to work with a player, I go all in. You know, he's like, look, I've watched a ton of your shots. I've watched interviews. I've read articles. I've done this, that, and the other. Because he loves what he does and he is incredibly dedicated to it. And so he said, look, I know that you have a lot more capability probably than what you've shown. And it seems like you probably lack confidence, and I'm good at getting guys confident and getting their game back to where, they feel good out there and they're confident enough to kind of go to things during games that they've learned in workouts. And also, to be honest with you, John, my shot is big. Everyone knows that, you know, to be able to stretch the floor, especially my size, is something I feel the NBA will continue to transition more and more into. And so he watched me. He's like, look, you're a strong guy and you're tall, so naturally you kind of lean back a little bit on your threes. And sometimes you're strong enough to get the ball over the rim and make your shot. But when you get tired or when, you know, you're battling on one end and you come down in transition and you have a little breakdown, that's really going to affect you. He said something to the effect of, whenever your shoulders lean back and you weren't on balance and your feet were too close together, you shot something below 30%. But when you were on balance and you were stepping in and you clearly felt good about the shot, you shot like 60-something. Now, I don't know how dialed those numbers are, but he's just incredible what he does. And it's been awesome working with him. And I wake up every day so hungry to, like, learn from this guy. And, you know, I walk out of that place just drenched head to toe, and I love it. I absolutely love it.
I'm watching people on Twitter all the time because I've got to kind of live there a little bit and promoting the show and sure. And breaking news and stuff like that. But I lose faith in humanity when I spend too much time on there because I know there's a thin stripe of people that are just they're mean. They're not rational. They're emotional. I mean, it's some of the worst parts of humanity are on display on Twitter. What does your Twitter feed look like when things aren't going good versus when things are going good?
It's night and day. And I think people in general, like, that's just the way it is. You know, you look at someone who's a diehard football fan and, you know, their quarterback is clearly unbelievable because he plays in the NFL. He's a starter and he's been starting for, let's call it 10 years. Like, oh, he's terrible. You know, it kind of goes the same way for me. You know, I feel like people are pretty hot and cold when it comes to me. I don't know why. I've done a much better job mentally of just saying, hey, you know what, some people are going to like me, some people aren't. You know, even guys, LeBron, Kevin Durant, Damian, TJ, everyone's going to have people that don't like him. But it's just, it gets nasty sometimes. It really does. I've heard some very, very absurd things about, I hope you get injured. I hope, you know, you get traded. You know, you're worthless, blah, blah, blah. And it's just, a lot of it is negativity, unfortunately. There are, although, many, many kind people, and, you know, they try to bring your spirits up. So, unfortunately, it's the bad stuff that tends to stick out in most people's minds. Honestly, I haven't really been on my social media all that much just because, number one, I want to spend time working out and getting better. And when I'm not, I want to give my full attention to my wife. And so, you know what? It's not only that. I know we've talked about this before. Yeah. It's just like, people are so into their phones. Like, they don't have real conversations.
Yeah, right.
I'll go out to dinner with my buddies from back home. So, you know, generally I'm probably going to pick up the bill, but I tell them to put their phone face down. And I say, hey, look, this is probably going to be, you know, a fairly expensive meal. Don't look at your phone, or, you know, first one that looks got to pay. So it's just, I really feel like we're losing the value of face-to-face conversation and knowing and understanding people and not being so obsessed with social media and a like on Facebook and a little heart on Instagram. And it's just, it's crazy, man. But in some ways, social media is great because, you know, you're able to reach fans and whatnot. But, you know, it is what it is. It's a very big thing.
I always wonder about people who are going to expend that much energy, though, in dishing negativity, like somebody going out of their way, and I won't even use an example, somebody going out of their way to create an account that is a fake account or to tweet at me incessantly. There's a guy the other day, it's like 8 tweets in a row, and I'm like, what is missing in your life that you have to spend that kind of time dishing hostility towards me or you or anybody else? I it's just lost on me. And to your point, and to your point about people who are buried, their heads down, I'm pushing a stroller at Disneyland, and I see a group of kids coming my way, and the girl out front has got her head down into her phone, probably Snapchatting or Instagramming or whatever she was doing.
Sure.
I got nowhere to go. I got a double stroller with 2 little kids in it, and I'm going at a distance. Hey, head up. Get your eyes up. Get your eyes up. And at the last minute, she almost trips over the stroller, and I'm like, get your eyes up. You're going to walk onto a train track or something. It's like, you're right. It's ridiculous.
Exactly.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I was driving the other day, and this woman had 2 of her little kids, and one of them kind of got away from her and sprinted directly in front of my car. And I wasn't moving fast, but if I were a young teenager on my phone or something, I would have plowed that little kid.
Yep.
Luckily, I was paying complete attention and you know, doing what you're supposed to do when you're driving, which is not have your face in your phone, which, by the way, I've considered taking pictures and or video of people, which would be kind of hypocritical because I would have then had my phone out. But it's just, it's like, stop looking at your phone. I don't even care if it's a red light. Just put it down.
Put it down. All right. You're missing out on the world when you're buried like that. All right. Myers-Leonard, keep up the fight. You know, I'm not going to ask you about trade possibilities. I'm not going to ask you about anything else because you don't control any of that. So all you can control is being the best player you can be.
Absolutely right.
All right, man. Take care of yourself and your family.
I appreciate it, John.
All right, you heard from Myers-Leonard. Tell me what you think of that interview. A lot of ground to cover there. Look, at least maybe in the interview he's humanized a little bit. You tell me. Caleb Swanigan, the other guy the Blazers got in the first round, you're going to love that guy. Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, he knows a little bit about Caleb Swanigan. He's joining us next.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The bald-faced truth.
John Canzano.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
We got so much to get to. So much to talk about. I want to know what you thought of Myers-Leonard's interview. 503-417-7575. Certainly, he humanized himself. talking about his dog, talking about the hate he gets on Twitter. Why do you hate Myers Leonard? Is it because of the contract? Is it because you feel let down? Is it because he's white? Why don't you like Myers Leonard? Because you hate him on Twitter. It's all I hear about. And I look at him and I'm like, and I thought he made a great point. He, you know, he has this $41 million contract put in front of him. What's he supposed to do? Say, no, I don't want to let anybody. Of course you take the money. Of course you sign that deal if the Blazers are offering it. Why do you hate on Myers Leonard? And is there anything he could do to change that? Humanized himself, certainly. He's got to play some better basketball. But he sounds like a guy who's locked in maybe for the first time in his career. And I also heard a guy whose confidence is rattled. Rattled by the fact that Zach Collins, who's going to be coming up at 2:30 on the show, has been drafted by the Blazers. You've got Neil Olshey, who's talking all about Collins. And by the way, I love the draft pick. I don't know if you've heard me say that yet, but I like the pick of Zach Collins. But if I'm Myers Leonard, I'm looking around going, hey, wait a minute. Last summer you loved me. What now? You tell me what you thought of the Myers Leonard interview. Did he change your mind? Did he become more of a human to you? I have to talk about Oregon State baseball, which I think got screwed by a home plate umpire over the weekend. First of all, the crew chief misses a fair foul call, and Pat Casey owned that, saying he should have appealed that, asked for a review. But the crew chief's got to get that right. He's got to huddle his guys together and say, hey, should we take another look at this? That's a 3-1 game that turned and pivoted on that play. Then in the final game of their season against LSU, I don't know what more you can do, but man, did it look bad when that home plate umpire was calling balls that were 6 inches outside strikes. And I hated seeing that. I hated seeing Oregon State's season end that way. Pat Casey deserves a fair share of the blame. Then he came out in that final game arguing with the umpire who is now at first base over another call. But certainly Oregon State baseball, I think, got hosed in Omaha. If you have a reaction to that, we can talk about that. We'll play some audio about that later in the show. And again, Jerry Palm of CBS Sports is coming up in a few minutes to talk about Caleb Swanigan, one of the new Blazers introduced today, and a guy that an NBA scout told me has got some Zach Randolph in him. Self-made, hardworking, tough, Caleb Swanigan. And you'll hear Jerry Palm, who is a Purdue fan, and makes no bones about it. As a media member, I try to, you know, I say, hey, I'm objective. I don't have a dog in the fight. I say things like that. Jerry Palm's got a dog in the fight. He works for CBS, and he started there in bracketology and in predicting the BCS years ago. And he is now just their resident numbers geek who looks at such things. But he is, I met him first of all when I was covering Purdue as a beat reporter in the late 1990s, and Drew Brees was there as the quarterback, and at Mackey Arena, you had Gene Cady, who had Brian Cardinal on that team, and some other good players, and Purdue was a Sweet 16 team in the season that I covered them. But I met Jerry Palm, and he was such a Purdue honk that when Caleb Swanigan was drafted by the Blazers, Jerry Palm's the first person I heard from. He's like, you're going to love Caleb Swanigan. And I said, why don't you come on our show and you tell our listeners about it? And he said, okay. So you hear Jerry Palm later. What'd you think of Myers Leonard? I thought he humanized himself. I don't know if I believe him when he said he slept through the draft. Do you? Is he looking over his shoulder? Does he have a place in Portland? Or is it incumbent upon the Blazers to shed that salary that they gave him a summer ago? Again, why are you blaming him? Blazers gave him the $41 million and now apparently are moving in another direction. Do you put that on him? What did you hear in that interview with Myers Leonard? 503-417-7575. We have two lines open. John's in Portland's going to lead us off. John, what'd you hear?
Yeah, good interview. I think humanizing them is a good way to put it. I don't know how they're going to unload the poor guy's contract. And so it's probably going to be kind of an uncomfortable season for him coming out. If he can stay injury-free, I think he's a pretty skilled player. He's pretty athletic for his height. So good luck to him. I know this is old news, John, but wanted to bring up the Ducks basketball team and Cavell. and that whole mess. Really poor judgment, tone deaf, if nothing else, to bring the guy in when he had that problem in Wyoming.
Yeah, it really interesting thing on the timeline, and I think it's being lost on a lot of people. And I missed it the first time that I saw it as well. And he's talking about Cavell Bigby Williams, who has since transferred from Oregon and is apparently headed to LSU if they'll take him. But in September of 2016, in Wyoming, a case was opened, a sex assault investigation involving Cavell Bigby Williams. And people want to think Oregon recruited a player who had a sex assault allegation pending. It didn't. If you look at the timeline, Cavell Bigby Williams was already an Oregon basketball player at the time of that assault. So let's first of all change the discussion to this was an Oregon Ducks basketball player who had already been to Europe with Dana Altman and the basketball team in August, who was back in Wyoming, apparently, who knows why, visiting friends, packing up his stuff, and decided, apparently to get himself mixed up in something. Now, charges have not been brought, and some time has passed. So I'm not saying there's a criminal matter here or not. The police will decide that. But what I am looking at is Oregon's reaction to this. I didn't like it, and I wrote it. I wrote it on Oregon Live. I wrote it in the Oregonian. I didn't like it for a number of reasons. Oregon's immediate reaction to the student newspaper that broke this, Kenny Jacoby, the student newspaper reporter down there in Eugene who broke this thing for the Daily Emerald, did a great job on the story, reported it well. First of all, the reaction from the university president, Michael Schill, I thought was embarrassing. And he has since released a statement, and I'm glad he did. Because I think the first message of any university president when there's a sex assault allegation, investigation, question, needs to be a strong statement about, hey, our campus is safe. We take this matter seriously. We'll do everything we can to assist in any investigation. And I want to assure women, especially on campus in Eugene, that they're safe and this is an important matter to us. That needed to be said first and foremost by the university president, and it wasn't. He later came out with a statement in which he made those points, and I'm glad he did. The second part, Dana Altman, the Oregon Ducks basketball coach, according to the report in the Daily Emerald, investigators asked for the contact information of Cavell Bigby Williams, a basketball player that had already been to Europe with Dana Altman and the team, that was part of Dana Altman's plan for this next season that would result in them being in the Final Four. Now, according to Rob Mullins and Dana Altman, they both, were aware that the police were looking for Cavell Bigby Williams and didn't ask any more questions. To me, that's a little Pollyanna and a whole lot of ostrich with a head buried in the sand. And you don't get to do that as the athletic director at Oregon and as the basketball coach at Oregon. And I like Rob Mullins, and I think Dana Altman is a good X and O basketball coach. But the more I look at the act of, hey, we didn't know, we didn't ask, I'm not giving you a pass on that. As the athletic director and the men's basketball coach on campus at Oregon, you also are in positions of leadership. If the police are asking my employer or my neighbor for my contact information, my employer and my neighbors are probably asking, well, what's this regarding? I know I would be. So basketball coaches at places like the University of Oregon are often able to lean back and go, hey, we didn't ask. Student privacy, all that stuff. Oregon has every basketball player that comes into the program now sign a FERPA release. That's a student records release. They run background on the players, and they should. They're bringing people to campus. They need to make sure they're bringing people to campus that they feel good about. But for Dana Altman to sit back and say, hey, I didn't know. I didn't ask. I think it's nonsense. And I think when you look at what he's saying, what Rob Mullins is apparently saying, I needed more from those guys, and I'm glad that a statement has since been released by Oregon. So I'm not convicting Cavell Bigby Williams. I'm just saying those in positions of leadership at Oregon, step it up. Ask questions and don't try to pretend like you didn't know. when we all know you only know what you want to know in the positions of athletic director and basketball coach. It's bureaucracy, the Ostrich Act, I'm not buying it, and University President Michael Schill, thank you for finally issuing that statement saying how important it was that this is a matter that's important to students on campus. All right, let's turn the attention to Caleb Swanigan. Neil Olshey said this about Zach Collins and Caleb Swanigan, his draft picks.
You know, I think the toughness is just more from a mindset. You know, I'm not talking about, you know, hockey thugs. I'm talking about guys that are mentally tough. When you look at a guy like, you look at a guy like Caleb, what he's been through, how he's transformed himself physically, mentally, what he's done with his game, what he's been through as a person, that kind of toughness. A guy like Zach Collins, who we know is a chippy player, doesn't back down. You guys have covered the WCC.
Appreciate the work you do on the NCAA tournament and also fixing the BCS, giving us this college football playoff, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Jerry Palm of CBS Sports is a guy that has covered the NCAA basketball scene for some time and has intimate knowledge of Caleb Swanigan as a player. I got a chance to interview him and talk with him earlier today. Here's that interview.
I'm with Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, resident sports geek there, and a huge... Can I call you a Purdue fan? Are you still a Purdue fan?
Of course. I was a Purdue fan. I was born there, went to school there. Been a Purdue fan a lot longer than I've been sports writer. So I have to set that aside at times. But, still a big Purdue fan.
Caleb Swanigan goes to the Blazers with that 26th pick in the first round. I see a guy who's just a fantastic story. For those of you who don't know, this is a kid who battled childhood obesity and homelessness and has fought for everything that he has earned in life and in basketball. But Jerry Palm, you followed him up close from his recruitment and there in the state of Indiana. Tell us about Caleb Swanigan.
Well, he's a guy, the story, as you just said. Caleb Swanigan is a guy with tremendous work ethic and had to have tremendous work ethic in order to turn his life around. And obviously he got some great guidance along the way. Roosevelt Barnes, who played football and basketball at Purdue, was a linebacker in the NFL and is now an agent, adopted him through connections and helped to provide, the structure that he needed in his life. And he's got his own discipline and his own work ethic and really turned his life around and is a guy that excels at, whatever he tries to do. And you've seen it, you know the story, but then you see it at Purdue too, where, he's a second team academic All-American. So he puts his same work ethic into his studies. But, after his freshman year, he comes out of high school. He's a five-star recruit and he's looking at Michigan State and is originally going to go there, ends up at Purdue. After his freshman year, was looking at the NBA, and a lot of guys, they go into that process with the thought that they're going. He went into that process with the thought of, what do I need to do? Am I ready now? First of all, is a question, but if I'm not, what do I need to do? And he was told a few things that he needed to work on and went and made himself better in those areas. And in particular, his outside shot last year was one of the things that they said that he needed to get better at. And, you tell him, you need to do this better or you can't do this, and you're going to find out that he will work very hard to make sure that he can. And that's probably, other than his actual skills, and he's got a lot of skills, his best asset as a basketball player is the willingness to work to improve the areas where he's deficient.
I think that real shortage of that in the NBA. I talked to an NBA scout right after the Blazers picked him, and he said he's a guy who's going to have success against other second team guys in the league, meaning he'll be a rotation player that'll play, he'll make the Blazers better. Is that chip on his shoulder big enough that maybe you could see Caleb Swanigan as a starter one day in the league?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I would be surprised if he wasn't a starter one day in the league. I don't know about the first day in the league, but I would be surprised if he didn't eventually end up a starter. Now, his game is more of a low post kind of a game. He likes to get in there and mix it up with people. He's a fantastic rebounder, great nose for the ball in that situation. But he's also, you know, a very good passer, an improving shooter, as we've seen, and, you know, will continue to improve in all of those areas. But the thing that he'll probably have to do, the difference between being a reserve and a starter for him in the NBA, will be better defense one-on-one, especially in some space. And I think that that's something that he'll work on and get better at. I will be really surprised if he's not a starter. If he stays healthy, and that's the big if with every athlete, Caleb Swanigan's going to be around the NBA for a decade or so.
The comparison that the scout made to me was Zach Randolph. He said he's got a little Zebo in him.
Yeah, maybe. I could see that. I think of him in terms of another Purdue guy who played for a long time in the NBA, and that's Brian Cardinal, who had a lot of the same attitude. Now, Brian was more of a small forward type and more of a natural shooter than Caleb is, who's more of an inside player. But I think that, you know, that's a guy. Caleb Swanigan's a guy that you want on your team because he's going to lead by example from the first day that he's in there, and he's got the skill to help you win games.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, is our guest. I know that when he originally declared for the draft, people were not sure, was he going to stay in it? Of course, he's got a dad who has adopted him, who is an agent, so there was no need to hire an agent. But
right.
But as a Purdue fan and the Purdue fan base, they had to be hoping he was coming back, right?
You always hope to get more of a guy like that, right? In college sports, you know, we as fans, we only get him for 4 years, right? And then, you know, that's part of the charm, I think, of college sports is that there's always turnover on the roster and, you know, your old favorites leave and new favorites come. But, yeah, of course, Purdue fans wanted him back for another year. But I don't know what was left for him to prove in college basketball at this point. He needed to get out and play against pros every day. And that's how he's going to improve now, is by playing against a higher level of competition and practice.
I look at a guy like this and I think he's a tough guy. And I know Neil Olshey.
He was number two in the nation in defensive rebounding. He can bang. He's tough. He scores around the block. He's just one of those guys we all keep talking about. We get into these non-position basketball anymore that you just put him on the court and let him play.
The Blazers general manager made that comment. Is Caleb Swanigan a tough guy?
Yeah, absolutely. Mentally tough for sure, but also physically tough. And you have to be to mix it up with some of the guys that he's been mixing it up with, both in practice at Purdue, like A.J. Hammonds, and then Isaac Haas, who's, you know, 7'2 and 300 pounds, and, you know, banging against a guy like that in practice. And then, you know, some of the guys you see in the Big Ten and in college basketball, he's definitely a tough guy.
All right, the Blazers get Caleb Swanigan. I imagine fans are going to love him. You, right away after the pick, reached out to me, and you're like, hey, people are going to love this guy. You're going to love this guy. I love his story. I mean, it's just such a good story. He's that kid that you know, every nonprofit organization that wants to help a kid that deserves a shot at his dream, that's Caleb Swanigan. I mean, that's the kid everybody's trying to help.
Yeah, exactly. It is that story, and you know, it doesn't always turn out this well, obviously. You know, this is a guy who got an opportunity and took full advantage of it. Obviously, he's blessed with some natural ability, but it didn't show up right away because, you know, of his situation and just being overweight. You know, once he put the work in and got into an environment where he was able to put the work in, you could see you know, you talk about a self-made man. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, Roosevelt Barnes provided the opportunity for that, but, you know, he deserves a ton of credit for the work that he's put into making himself who he is just to this point in his life. And he's, what, 19 years old? You know, a long way to go still for Caleb Swanigan.
All right, we've got to fix the NBA still. You and I need to get together on this. I'd like to make you commissioner of the league to help small market teams, because I just feel like, if you're not good in the draft, if you're Portland, you don't make good trades, free agency is just not available to you. A team like Portland can't get better.
Well, I can't help you with that.
I know.
I don't know how to fix that particular problem, but it's, you know, Cleveland isn't really a huge market, but you got LeBron James, right?
Right.
And drafted him, gave him up, got him back as a free agent, so.
Yeah, give us LeBron as the example, Jerry Palm. We'll go out and get LeBron. Leave it right here. Punch It Audio next.
More with John Canzano, the bald-faced truth.
I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. I think you're mad at me. You tweet at me and you tell me that you don't like when we have a guest host when I'm out. And you tweet at me when I do a best of when I'm out. And you say you don't like that either. What you're saying to me is you don't want me to leave the studio. I get that. I went from Omaha, where I was covering Oregon State baseball. I went to Anaheim over the weekend. And the 14-year-old is a big VidCon person. If you don't know what VidCon is, it's the annual YouTube convention. If you have a teenager, you should be going just to see what they're into. Try to stay cool like I am. Walking around there. We also made a Disneyland visit. We made Saturday Disney Day. And we took the one-year-old and the three-year-old mostly into California Adventure. And if you've got little kids, you know what I'm talking about when you say, man, yeah, it's the happiest place on earth. It's also like I love being back to work. It's easier to be at work than it is to be in Disneyland with four kids. But the one-year-old and the three-year-old are not into, like, they don't want to go on the Tower of Terror that is now Galaxy of the Guardians or Guardians of the Galaxy, whatever that is, or California Screaming or all the roller coasters and the fast rides. The kids want to go on, like, the Caterpillar ride. And when Disneyland, they want to go on It's a Small World. But the 11-year-old and the 14-year-old in the household want to go on all the fast rides. They want to go on Matterhorn. They want to get a fast pass and go on Space Mountain. So there comes a decision as a parent that you make when you're in Disneyland and you've got kids with a vast array of interests. We have to decide which of the kids you're okay if they get kidnapped. I guess that's the decision you have to make. Because there just came a point where we turned to the 11-year-old and the 14-year-old and we're like, you're in Disneyland, it's a pretty safe place. Go on Space Mountain, Matterhorn, meet us back here in like an hour. And the fact that they've got a cell phone on them helps because we could track them. But I'm just saying, like, it's being having a double stroller in Disneyland, that's like the Amazing Race. Gliss, producer of the show, you got a pack of kids yourself. You've been to Disneyland. You're shaking your head.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. It is... You can just see the discomfort in the parents' face, right? Like the middle of the afternoon when it starts to get hot and the kids are falling apart. They haven't had enough to eat. It's a little rough.
It's that middle of the day. We went back to the hotel in the middle of the day.
That's the best strategy. You go early, spend a couple hours, yeah. Go take a break, and then go back out when it's cool.
Except my middle of the day break was, hey, VidCon's still going on. Let mom rest and the little babies take naps. Dad, go over to the Anaheim Convention Center with us and walk around and watch, you know, Instagram and Snapchat and whatever else is going on in the world.
So you got no rest.
No rest for me.
Sounds fun. Good time.
I feel good. I'm back to work. Dave's called in. We're going to get to Punch It Audio here in a moment. Dave, where are you, man?
Currently about 70 miles east of Boise.
What are you doing 70 miles east of Boise, Idaho?
Well, I'm on my way back from the College World Series.
Oh, man.
So second day on the road back. But what I wanted to talk about, John, and I'll try to keep this sensible and civil, but I have to say it's been rich listening to the show that we've been streaming over the last hour or so with you complaining about meanness and negativity on Twitter, and then more recently the Swanigan deserving a shot at redemption, an adult professional basketball
player. Wait a minute. Why does he need a shot at redemption?
Well, that's what you and Jerry Palm were talking about.
No, Swanigan didn't do anything. Redemption was not the theme of the Caleb Swanigan interview. What it was this is a guy who's overcoming homelessness and obesity.
Yeah.
And I know where you're going with this.
Okay.
He's not a registered sex offender. Let's start with that. Can we agree on that?
Yes, we can agree on
that. All right. Thank you for conceding that point. All right. What else is on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say that I'll concede that, John, if you concede that you need to do some brushing up on juvenile law in the state of Washington, of which you know little, as you evidence little, certainly in print from what I've seen. And if anyone, and here's a young man who was building his own story of redemption. And if you want, what you ought to do is stay in your lane, which is sports news, president criminal justice. And why don't you investigate, for example, the travesty of the SEC ESPN nexus with a little dose of Nike influence. And I mean, you're talking about small market teams like the Trailblazers needing some help. Well, there's a small market team down in the little college town of Corvallis, Oregon, that needs the press in the state of Oregon, not being one of its principal enemies, to which you are one of the contributing factors. So I know I'm frustrated. I know it's coming through, but this was yellow journalism at its worst, what happened. And I'm sure there's some people that are happy that Oregon State's season came a cropper, but they went without their best pitcher and their starting left fielder. Coach bungled that call on Friday. So there's lots of blame to go around.
You're frustrated. You're frustrated.
You're angry
and you're frustrated, and you're streaming this show, and now I'm giving you a platform to vent. Do you feel better?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. Now I'm going to go, because you're saying they went without their best pitcher. That was their choice.
They were stampeded into that choice by the likes of what you wrote in the print
radio. Were they, or did they decide, hey, bringing a registered sex offender to Omaha, where, by the way, he would have had to register as a sex offender in the state of Nebraska and in Omaha. Did you know that? Bringing him there would have been a huge distraction to this team. And hey, we didn't know he was a registered sex offender. We just found out, and we're deciding not to bring him. And by the way, Major League Baseball had an opportunity in 40 rounds of drafting players to say, hey, you know what? We'll take a guy like that on our team. And Major League Baseball said no, Dave.
Well, there might be a silver lining in this. I admit it's a glimmer of one, but maybe he'll come back to next year's team, and he can be the starting pitcher that leads them back to Omaha again. But regarding public opinion on this, an unbiased cross-selection of the American public, the reading public of the Omaha newspaper, and an online poll, 76% of them said that what had happened to Luke Heimlich was a travesty, and he should have traveled with the team. There would have been no incident there. Everyone would have adjusted, gotten used to it. But you and Danny got what you wanted.
Hey, Dave, so, Dave.
Yeah, John.
There's a little girl who got molested.
I agree.
Are you against molesting little girls? Yes, you are. Of course you are.
I'm also,
so let's start. I let you talk. I let you talk. I don't want to put you on hold. Just have a conversation with me here. Let's start with the idea that if this had not happened to an Oregon State player, I believe you'd feel much differently. If this were an LSU player, you wouldn't be calling in telling me it's a travesty. If this were an Oregon Duck, you wouldn't be calling in. And that's the problem that I have with Beaver fans who are upset at the media for reporting. Nobody made this up. We've talked about this ad nauseum. I'm sick of talking about it. I think Oregon State made the right decision in leaving him home. But you shouldn't have a player on scholarship at Oregon State, Portland State, University of Portland, who is a registered sex offender. That's what I believe. It's where I stand. And it's not a second chance issue. You got to make a decision when you're talking about second chances, whatever. You're going to hear Dr. Harry Edwards on tomorrow's show speak specifically about second chances. That is a sociologist who works in the NFL, with the NBA. He worked with Oregon on LeGarrette Blount. He's going to talk about Ray Rice. Why didn't Ray Rice get a second chance? Harry Edwards will tell you. It's because when you take a player who's got baggage, you have to make a decision for yourself. Hey, second chances, are you sure? We all believe in them. But what can you live with as an organization? What can you live with as a family? What can you live with as a business? What can I live with as a radio show? I once upon a time had a guy who applied for a position on this radio show as a producer who had a domestic violence conviction. He applied for the position. I was surprised because I knew the guy, and I thought, gosh, I know him a little bit, but he's got a domestic violence conviction. I told him, I'm sorry, I can't hire you. He could have pled to me, hey, what about a second chance, Gonzano? Give me a second chance. And maybe he thinks I'm mean to this day. He probably listens to the show. But the bottom line was, I wasn't all right with that. I wasn't all right with that. I also wasn't all right a few years ago when one of the local, strip clubs. One of the local strip clubs wanted to advertise, and all of a sudden I'm listening to the show and I hear a strip club advertisement. I went in and I said, nope, not on this show. And it happened again just a month ago in the last few weeks. Started hearing advertisements for a strip club. I walked down to the department that's in charge of the advertising, and I said, hey, I want those blocked out of my show. They're out of my show. I have to decide what I can live with on this show. Oregon State has to decide what it can live with. Oregon, certainly, I'm upset at Oregon over Cavell Bigby Williams and Dana Altman's stance on that. Come on. Oregon and Oregon State are getting too much attention lately for the wrong things. I want them to get caught doing everything right. It's just not realistic. But the bottom line is, come on. Justin's in Portland. He's called in. What's up, Justin?
Hey, John. Hey, I just want to call. I listen to the show every day. And your last caller, you know, I respect you a lot for putting him on the air. But at the same time, the guys in Portland, you know, there's a lot of people that have, you know, your back as far as a listener. And I just want to say, on the whole Luke Heimlich thing, you approached it on both angles, and you made a good point on both sides of it. So I just want to call in and say I appreciate your outlook on it. And even though it you know, people think it's unfair or second chances, you as a journalist, you've done a good job with agreeing with people that call in, but also looking at both sides of things. So as a listener, I just want to call and say thanks for, you know, being a guy kind of in the middle and giving listeners like myself things to think about, maybe other aspects that we may not have thought about. So I'm a listener. I'll always be a listener, and I appreciate you, man. Thanks.
Thank you for that. I appreciate you as well. And that's a good call, because I always try to say that this radio show, if nothing else, it should make you think. Maybe it'll make you laugh. Maybe it'll make you cry. Maybe it'll make you feel something. It's no two shows are the same. I think the interviews sometimes are the best part of the show. Some other days, once in a blue moon, the callers rule the day. The callers are terrific. We've been on 10 years, and I think there's a reason why we've had that staying power. I think the show's real. And I'll fall in line with the caller. It's not a black and white issue. Luke Heimlich or anything else, Cavell Bigby Williams at Oregon, not a black and white issue. Life is not that clean. It's gnarled. It's knotted. It's complicated. There's a lot of gray area. I put myself in the shoes of Pat Casey. What if Pat Casey recruited a player, which I think he recruited, a player who has had a conviction for molestation and didn't run a background check, didn't really know about it? I'd buy that. I'd buy that Pat Casey doesn't know how to run a background check. I've spent enough time around him to know that. I also feel like if you are an Oregon State student and you're feeling so good about this Oregon State program, you finally have something good to feel about, right? You won the Civil War. You went into basketball season. Basketball season didn't go your way. You had a horrible basketball season. You come into the spring in baseball. You're tired of getting beat down, punched in the stomach, kicked in the gut. However you want to, whatever metaphor you want to use. And ultimately you decide baseball is what we're going to feel good about. And you have the consensus number one team in America. And everything's headed towards Omaha. And man, you remember what it was in 06 and 07 when they went back to back and they won it all. You're going to have something to stick in the nose of the Duck fan. And then you find out you got a registered sex offender on the mound. And not only that, he's your best pitcher. So I see, I guess I understand a little bit how you would be clouded or confused about how to feel. You're rooting for the guy one minute, and the next minute you're realizing he did something horrible when he was 15, and he pled guilty to it. And by the way, it happened over a number of years. And so the person inside of you may be sitting there going, I'm not good with this. Who could be? And if it were at Oregon, I would be feel much differently. But man, I want to trust what Pat Casey's doing, and I want to trust. And now suddenly, oh yeah, I can see how you tip into the direction of, oh, second chances for everyone. There are just some things, as Dr. Harry Edwards will tell us on tomorrow's show, that organizations have to make a decision, teams have to make a decision, programs have to make a decision on what they can live with. It's who's keeping score. It's, you know, it's about what you can live with and what you want to be about. And for me, I know the brand of Oregon State baseball. I've spent time around Pat Casey and Pat Bailey away from the baseball diamond. I can tell you this. I wrote critically of their programs. I went to Omaha. I saw them face to face in Omaha. And both Pat Casey and Pat Bailey were gentlemen and professional, and we had conversations away from things. And, hey, John, how you doing? They know. They're not taking this personally. They're too classy to do that, and they're aware of it. And you know what? Their players followed that suit. I walked into the Beavers locker room the first time I walked in there, and I'm walking around the locker room, and they know I was critical of their teammate and the program. And those guys were nothing but respectful. It said a lot about Oregon State, said a lot about the baseball program, because there are some places that I've covered where if you wrote fairly and critically about them, oh, you're not welcome here. Never mind what you can live with. So, yeah, I get it. I get how you get clouded. But let's try to step out of that cloud for a minute. Just ask yourself. It's like the caller. He went, like, he couldn't speak. His tongue was tied. When I asked him, you wouldn't feel the same if it were LSU. That's how it broke down. Stop blaming the messenger. You had a registered sex offender in your team. The Blazers had a registered sex offender at small forward once upon a time. Reuben Patterson. And don't give me some poll in the Omaha World Herald to try to dictate what I'm okay with. I'm not. I conducted an independent poll. One voter. How did I feel about it? Would I take a registered sex offender as part of this radio show team? No. Would I take somebody with a domestic violence conviction? No. Am I okay with strip club advertisements playing during this show? No. And in fact, on the BFT Radio Network, the agreement that I have drawn up in Eugene and in Klamath Falls with the radio affiliates there, give me the right of refusal on the kinds of ads that can run within the show. I don't care about the money. I care about kids listening to the show, women listening to the show, families listening to the show. I care about my other advertisers more. There's always going to be times when I have to put my fists up and defend that, but this is not a hard thing for me. It's not a difficult decision. Tom's in Salem. Tom, what's on your mind?
Hi, John. I've just been listening to the last couple of calls. I just had a couple of comments. I can use the same caveat and say it was a terrible thing that happened. We all agree with that. But, you know, this kid was convicted. By the way, I didn't go to Oregon State. I didn't go to Oregon. I'm not even from Oregon. I don't even care about that. The point is he was convicted and paid a price back and pleaded guilty. It seems to me all this has convicted him twice. And my question would be, how long does he stay guilty? I know he's guilty. He admitted it. But how long does he pay the price is my question.
I think it's fair. You think, what was his punishment, though? See, this is why I keep coming back to it, because to me, his punishment included having to register as a sex offender. I mean, that's part of his sentence.
Yeah, everywhere he goes for the rest of his life. And that's going to hang with him. But, and I don't know how much it would have affected the situation in Omaha with him being there. Would have been a big news story for everybody else in the country coming and wanting to talk to him.
I tell you that the Omaha media, and I get your point, you think he's been convicted twice here. The Omaha media told me they were grateful that he wasn't there because they were going to have to cover it. It was going to be a distraction. ESPN didn't know what to do with it. To the point of how long does he have to pay the price, it's situational. Is he eligible to babysit my children? Never. Do I want him on this radio show? Never. Is he Free to pursue a degree? Sure, if a college will take them. Again, it's situational. If you're Oregon State, you have to decide, what can you live with? If you're Oregon, you have to decide, what can you live with? Will they let him be a student? That's up to Oregon State. Will they put him in uniform? That's up to Oregon State. But I'll tell you, if it were up to me, you're free to pursue your dreams. You're just not doing it on my team. And Oregon State's one of the teams that I cover. 503-417-7575.
I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
Okay. Here we go.
The bald-faced truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Mattress Firm. Go to mattressfirm.com or get yourself out to any Mattress Firm location. If you are in need of a good night of sleep, Mattress Firm can help you. They've got the sleep experts at Mattress Firm to help you save money and sleep happy. Mattress Firm has the 4th of July sale. It's on now. You can take advantage of the savings at Mattress Firm. I know that I shop at Mattress Firm, and I know when anybody tells me, hey, I'm looking for a mattress, I go see the sleep experts at Mattress Firm. I'm not an expert on mattresses. I'm an expert on my home sprinkler system. I know all the tricks of it. No one else knows this. Like, if I got hit by a bus, everything in the yard dies with me. But I'm an expert on mattresses. Not an expert on mattresses. And that's why I go to Mattress Firm, where they help me out and they tell me which mattress to buy. And they tell me, hey, here's how you save money on it. And same or next day delivery on most mattress sets as well. So get yourself in there. They can even take away your old mattress. Mattress Firm. I want to play Punch It Audio this segment, but we've got a lot of people holding who want to weigh in on that caller last segment who's driving from Boise, Idaho. He's driving from Omaha back to Corvallis. He's upset. He's venting. He hates me. He's streaming this radio show because he hates me so much. And I gave him a chance to talk. And I also think I knocked him out by asking him about his rooting interest. And a lot of you on Twitter are upset at him. You want to vent, so I'll give you a little bit of a platform. Andre's in Portland. Andre, go ahead.
That dude was like a super fan. It was totally obvious. I don't understand how, with this situation, this is how I judge every criminal act that I have to deal with. In this case, if it were my daughter, I mean, can you imagine a member of your family doing this to your daughter repeatedly over years? Gets caught, convicted, and now he's in college on the verge of, like, this major career that he has. How could that, like, be cool with anybody? Dude driving from Boise, how could that be cool with you if that was your daughter, man? I don't understand this.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Thank you, Andre. Andre, very reasonable, rational human being, not clouded in his judgment. And people ask why the Scarlet Letter with sex offenses. It's because the survivor, the victim in this case, young girl, who's now 11, she's going to live with this for the rest of her life. I asked a law enforcement person, like, why the Scarlet Letter? And they said, well, it's because you're looking at a victim that is living with this forever. And look, do I want Luke Heimlich to die? No. Do I want him to rot in hell? No. The only good that can come out of this is that he's a productive member of society moving forward. But I also believe that he doesn't need baseball to be a productive member of society. If a major league team can live with it, as I said, that's what it comes back to, then by all means, put him in uniform. But I don't think a public university, not in this state, and not certainly one that I cover, I'm going to sound off on that. And I did. Wilson's in Dayton. Wilson, what's up?
Hey, John, just responding to that caller earlier, I spent 4 years in the military, and I've seen a lot of false in my career. So when it comes to a convicted sex offender like Heimlich, it's very easy for me to judge. And I don't think he should have any state funding, no scholarship. I don't think he should have a place on the team. And when it goes to Big B Williams, I'm a diehard Duck, and I'm really glad he's not on the team anymore. But I'm also cautious to see what happens before any charges are filed.
Yeah. And that's why, and I appreciate that call as well. That's why I say if there's a criminal act with the Cavell Big B Williams situation, then let's let that process play out. But the problem I was having with Oregon was its response when the Daily Emerald in Eugene made that report. I wanted the university president to be stronger there. At least initially, he was not. And Michael Schill has since come out with a statement that is much stronger. And I was like, okay, that's the statement you needed to make. It was like the United Airlines thing. You come out and you make a strong statement. And if you are the athletic director or basketball coach at Oregon, you don't lean on, well, the police called to make contact. They asked for his contact info. Eh, we didn't ask any questions. That's where it ended. That's not where it ends. You're a leader on campus. You don't get to bury your head in the sand. So I'm glad Cavell Big B Williams is no longer in uniform, too, because it erases that problem. I just didn't like the reaction of the adults on campus. And by the way, will LSU take him? Again, what can you live with? That's what it comes down to. Tom's in Monmouth.
Yeah, thanks, John. Hey, I was just going to say, I'm a teacher, I'm a coach, and I'm a father, and we're in the business of producing men or very, you know, when we coach, we want to produce great men, and that's our big thing. I'm more proud of Oregon State baseball because what they did, they stepped up when Heimlich went out, and people like Bryce Femmel stepped up and pitched very well. And I think that I was way more proud of that than if I had to watch Heimlich win a national championship for Oregon State. So that was just what I want to bring up. I think Pat Casey and I think the Oregon State baseball team really stepped up and had a hell of a postseason in light of the Heimlich situation.
No question, Tom. I appreciate that. And look, I got to know a couple of guys on the team, spent a few days around them. I had the same takeaway. This was a team that was rallying around itself, and it wasn't rallying around, oh, our player got taken away from us. That wasn't the rally cry. It's a good group of guys that were, if you asked them, if I went around that locker room and I said, do you want Pat Casey to recruit a registered sex offender next year and bring him into the program? I can bet you to a man, they would all say no. But if you ask him about their friend Luke Heimlich, you know, I don't know. And I think it gets clouded when all you know is somebody doing the right thing. And you find out, wow, they did something horrible. Mike's in Portland. Mike, you get the last word on this, and we're going into Punch It Audio, I promise.
First of all, John, sports is not a panacea. Sports is probably the most reprobated aspect of society. Anytime an athlete can command the kind of money they get, and then someone that works in the medical profession get paid what they get paid, we know right now that sports is corrupt. And so for people to come on the air and act like sports is a panacea, they're missing the point. When you can pay a semi-literate ball player millions of dollars, folks, and you guys in society accept that, and then you get sick and go to the hospital, and the person that's there saving your lives is making peanuts compared to what the sports players are making, how can you come on the air today and be so hypocritical and act like there's something great about sports? Sports is wrong, man. I mean, not wrong, but I'm saying the culture in sports as a whole has never been this panacea for anything. It's reprobated.
Sports over the years, we've said things like it heals. After 9/11, we got to get back to the games. You see the scene at Yankee Stadium. You see communities in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina coming back together for the Super Bowl. We talk about sports having the ability to heal. But, Mike, you're right. It includes people. And I think the more people you include, you start to find corruption. You start to find values that are skewed. And certainly with fans, you get fans who are blinded by their allegiance.
Well, of course, but you got to understand, the fans are they're fickle. the mere fact that the Blazers can give a dog and pony act for 30 or 40 years and the fans accept that, that right there tells you they're low-information people. They're fickle, man.
Yeah, and, I agree with that. And Kyle on Twitter says, look, we have a human rights issue in society, and sports is a microcosm of our issues. I think it's a great way to put it. Follow me on Twitter, at John Canzano, BFT.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth headquarters. Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Pat Casey, Oregon State baseball coach, talking about the loss to LSU that ended their season. Punch it.
It's a tough day when you've had such a great year, and now's not the time to really, you know, think about that or talk about it. But I know there will be a time when they get to sit back and reflect and realize what they accomplished.
Great season ended short of where it should have. Felt like they ran out of gas. Also felt like that umpire crew that called both their last two games of the season, not on their best, not at their best. KJ Harrison afterward was asked about the umpiring crew in Omaha. Punch it.
Yeah, I think the same thing. You know, it is what it is, and you know, you can't let the umpire dictate the game, and you can't say it was the umpire's fault in any way. You know, you got to adjust and do it what you got.
He's right. You got to overcome, and good teams do that. But this was a good team that I felt like was up against just too much. And look, anybody who's played baseball will tell you that one of the most difficult things to adjust to is an umpire that's got a weird strike zone. And even more difficult is when an umpire has an inconsistent strike zone. And I think you got those things in the last game, and you certainly got a home plate, a crew chief, who blew the foul ball call in the second to last game, and LSU's too good a team to give that to. Tough way to end the year for Oregon State baseball. But again, baseball is a sport where on any given day. Blazers held their introductory press conference for Caleb Swanigan and Zach Collins earlier today. Zach Collins is going to be joining us here in about 15 minutes. Neil Olshey explained the plan. Here's the plan. Ready?
You know, it doesn't go unnoticed. We know we have the youngest team in the NBA. But we also have the youngest team in the NBA that made the playoffs in back-to-back years, which nobody else has done either. So nobody is saying that this is all about youth and just the future and long term. What it's about is building this thing the right way so that it's sustainable, so we can compete now and into the future. One thing we've all learned, Roosevelt Sphere played in the NFL forever. There are no quick fixes. Quick fixes create problems. That's what they do. And that's not what we've been about here. We've been about building something that can be sustainable on a long-term basis, and we're going to be competitive while we do it. And that's why we got two of the most competitive guys in this draft, because we know they're going to raise the bar in practice, in games, and in workouts every day.
All right, I'm calling bull ass, that BS on part of that. Bull ass, too. Olshey saying that it's about building it the right way, I'll buy. Zach Collins and Caleb Swanigan, I like the picks. I like the fact that I think they had a good draft. But quick fit, we're not about quick fixes. Are you kidding me? Did you see last summer? Was he here? Is he new? He spent last summer chasing a quick fix, trying to find a way out. Aaron Aflalo was a quick fix that didn't work out. They've had a lot of quick fixes in Neil Olshey's time with the team. The fact of the matter is, they're selling the future now. And there's only two things you can sell as a sports franchise. You can sell proof of performance. We did it. We won 5 championships. We're the reigning champion. We've made the playoffs so many times, 21 straight years. You can sell that. Or you have to sell hope. And he's peddling hope today. I like that he's doing it with Caleb Swanigan, though. This guy's a good player that you're going to like. He was asked about his role with the Blazers. Punch it.
You know, not to be too simple, I see myself playing basketball. And what I mean by that is you get on the court by doing passing, rebound, shooting, defending, and doing those things. And if you can do those things and help your team win, you'll find yourself on the court. And it doesn't matter what you can do on offense. It matters who you can guard. So wherever they feel like I can guard best is where I'll play.
I like that guy. You need guys like that on your team. Not everybody can be a rapper. Not everybody can be on the cover of GQ magazine. You need some guys that are going to rebound. You need some guys that are going to defend. You need some guys that people don't like to play against. Caleb Swanigan is a guy that people don't enjoy playing against. And I like that. Zach Collins, the other guy drafted number 10 overall, was asked about the stigma that comes with being a white basketball player. This is interesting. Punch it.
I don't know. I just think, you know, from a young age, regardless of, you know, if I'm white or black, you know, I just think that, you know, I've kind of been doubted and, you know, had certain expectations that, you know, I've exceeded, whether that's on the court, off the court. And, you know, that my mindset won't change regardless of what people say about, you know, what my race is or anything like that. But, you know, I feel like if you can play, you can play. And, you know, I don't think GMs or coaches or anybody cares, you know, what race you are. If you can play, you're going to get on the court. So that's just how I've looked at it.
I agree with that in principle, but I also know that when Zach Collins was picked, people compared him to Myers Leonard. I thought that was an interesting comparison that some of you made. Why that? Terry Stotts talked about the draft picks. It's his job to make it fit. Here's the coach. Punch it.
Well, as soon as we drafted him, I watched some edits on both of them just to kind of get a better feel for who they were as players. You know, it's a process over the summer. We'll have them in next week for summer league, and then they'll both be at Gerg's camp, and they'll be here in September. So I think that the next 3 months will be important for them and for us as far as getting to know each other and for them to kind of assimilate to what we want to do, and for us to take advantage of what they do. So, you know, start of the season is always kind of in the back of my mind, but for right now, it's a process for both of them and us to get to that point.
I ever notice with Terry Stotts that he's got this speech thing where he doesn't finish his ING sentences? Does a getting thing? I don't know. It's interesting. He's right. And I thought the best part of that was him talking about them going to Tim Gergrich's big man camp. They are big men. They need footwork help, especially Zach Collins, who's a young player. Tim Gergrich, former Blazers assistant, runs his annual big man camp in Vegas. He can help these guys. Seattle Sounders were visiting Providence Park last night, and they had both middle fingers out. Things looked good for the Timbers early on. Punch it.
Guzman curling it in. Espria rising up! Phenomenal goal from Dyron Espria, who cartwheels and backflips in front of the Timbers army. It is 2-1, a thundering header from Dyron Espria.
I don't have a European accent, but I think if I called soccer, I'd develop one. That was a great goal, followed by a more athletic celebration with the backflip. But again, here's the Timbers. Late in the game, in the 93rd, 94th minute, trying to close it out. You got Clint Dempsey, a clinical finisher in the box. You get a body on him. You do not let Clint Dempsey score. That's the objective in the final minutes of the game. You're walking away with 2 points here, not one. Clint Dempsey's in the box. This is what happens. Punch it.
Torres forward, right side edge of the 18, chance to cross. Torres sending it into the area. Dempsey rising up and heading it in at the death. Seattle has tied it up 2-2.
A giddy Caleb Porter after the game. Punch it.
To be a great team, to be a team that wins something, we have to have more killer instinct. We have to have more guys that are finding ways to win games. Excuse my French.
That's not French. I think that's English. I'm with him, though. Inexcusable. Somebody's going to find themselves not on the Timbers roster anymore because of what happened last night. That is an inexcusable defensive play. You have to be mindful of the situation. You have a couple of minutes to close out this game. The ball's in the air. You do not get beat on a cross. Don't get beat to a spot, and if Clint Dempsey's going up for a header, you're going up right with him. Timbers defender was a step late there. Caleb Porter speaking French. Need an interpreter? Jordan Spieth with some late drama on Sunday in a playoff at the Travelers Championship. He's in a bunker on a playoff hole. Punch it.
Right at it. Right at it! Home!
Jordan
He's
Spieth.
Done it again! Just as he did at the John Deere for his first win.
Unbelievable. Yeah. First playoff hole, he holes out of the bunker. I've never done that. I've never caught a foul ball at a baseball game. I've never holed out of a bunker. Jordan Spieth with a win. I just don't know how that feels. Like, everybody's thinking about talking about Jordan Spieth. I was watching the face of the guy who lost the playoff when Jordan Spieth was in a bunker. Like, he's in the bunker, and you're thinking, I got a shot to win this thing. And he holes out. That was a bad feeling for that guy. Coming up, Zach Collins, Portland Trailblazers rookie, number 10 overall pick. You heard from Myers Leonard earlier in the show. Jerry Palm talked about Caleb Swanigan. Zach Collins is going to come up here at 2:30 and going to talk about being the number 10 pick. I'm going to ask him about his offseason plans and where he fits in this Blazers lineup. Leave it here.
This is the Bald-Faced Truth.
In the future, things will be better. In the future, we will live brighter. In the future, you will be me. In the future, we'll all come to see. In the future.
Tomorrow's radio show will include Larry Fitzgerald Sr., Bob Lilly, Pro Football Hall of Famer, Lenny Wilkins, former NBA player and coach. On Wednesday, Jim Herrick, former basketball coach, Dr. Harry Edwards will be on Wednesday's show. And Thursday, you'll hear from the Iceman, George Gervin, Hale Irwin and Gary Player on that show as well. Joining us now, though, newest Blazer, one of the newest guys, Zach Collins. I like the pick. I'm on record with this. I said trading for Zach Collins was like trading 2 1-carat diamonds for a 2-carat diamond. You buy that trade? Zach Collins joining us. How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Are you a diamond earring guy?
No, I don't wear earrings.
Me neither. What do you like? There are guys who are into that. And at any point, do you look back at anything you did at high school? Acid wash jeans, pegging your pants, an earring. Was there anything you're embarrassed about?
No, I don't think at my high school. We had to wear uniforms, so I couldn't really spice it up too much.
You're in a Blazers uniform now. Did you really tweet a couple years ago that you wanted to be like the number 10 or 12 pick for the Blazers?
No, I was playing NBA 2K, and while I was playing my career, my guy got drafted 11 to the Blazers, so I finally tweeted. And I think that was like 3-4 years ago, I think.
That's crazy. So
it's pretty funny. Yeah.
You're staying in the Northwest. You good with that?
Yeah, I love it up here. I'm pretty familiar just because of Gonzaga. And we came to Portland a couple times to play the Pilots, and it's close to home, so it's nice.
I was frustrated at the Final Four. I was there covering it for the Oregonian, and I did not like the way the game was officiated. I hated all the whistles. I know you hated it.
Yeah.
What do you say to people who are like, hey, he can't stay out of foul trouble?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the numbers, they're probably right. But, I just take that foul trouble as me going after everything. I'm not really afraid to get like, shown up or get dunked on or anything. So, like, I just kind of go after everything. And sometimes I was probably being too aggressive, and that's probably why I got a lot of fouls.
I don't mind that. And I was rooting kind of secretly for an Oregon-Gonzaga final anyway, and I thought that would have been – that would have been more fun. Would you like to play Oregon?
I think I would have liked to play either team, but I think it would have been cool to have two West Coast teams in the national championship, just because the East has dominated the college scene for so long.
I like your game. I like that they moved up to get you. I wrote that I want to be on record with this. I wrote that I thought 10 years from now we could look back and say you were the best player in this draft. You have to play the games, though. You've got to play with confidence. How do you feel now that you're a professional?
I feel really good, especially this. I'm out in Portland right now, and I visited the practice facility, did the press conference, got to meet everyone like in the organization a little bit, and I've driven around Portland a lot. And I really I'm excited, especially being here. And I think, my comfort level that I established here today, obviously, over the summer, getting to know the guys more, working out here more, I think I'm just going to get that much more comfortable, and I think I'll be ready.
Zach Collins, Trailblazers rookie, number 10 overall pick, is our guest. How does a player who gets drafted and come here, like you're focused on basketball, but there's a part of you that has to live here too. How do you get set up? Like, how do you decide where you're going to live? Does the team have somebody to help you, or are you and your family on your own there?
I think the team has someone to help us out. And obviously you can ask guys that, you know, were rookies before where they lived. And there's a spot right across the practice facility that the team recommended that we look at. So we went and looked at that today. It was actually really nice. So they make it pretty easy for us.
Yeah, don't let a veteran player con you into buying like a $6 million house.
Right. Yeah, I can't really. That's second contract money right there.
Zach Collins is with us. When you hear your name called or you find out that the Blazers are trading up to get you, you have to wear that Sacramento Kings hat. And I know you've been asked about it, but were you aware when you had the hat on that you had already been traded, or what are you aware of in that situation?
Yeah, I was already in Portland mode when I got the hat and walked on stage, because I found out like 3 minutes before they said my name. My agent was on the phone with Portland, and they told me that they were going to pick me. So, I kind of already knew. I knew I was going to Portland, so it was kind of weird.
We had Myers Leonard on the show earlier, and it's a weird spot for him to be in because it's Yusuf Nurkic, it's you, it's Myers Leonard. Can the three of you coexist?
I believe we can. I think, you know, we're all different players, and there's some things we all do pretty well, and there's some similarities between our games, but I think we're all pretty different. And I think that, you know, when you have versatility like that with big man, and, you know, obviously we have great guards, I think it all works well together, so I think we'll be fine.
You mentioned in one of the news conference interviews that you were contacted on Twitter, or at least a couple guys tweeted to you to make you feel welcome. You're a 19-year-old professional. I was 19. I was like at an arcade somewhere. Is that
right?
How do you get the maturity? Because can you grow up fast, or is that something that just naturally has to happen?
I think you just got to. I mean, I don't really have a choice now.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, growing up, my parents, you know, kind of raised me to, you know, kind of be a little bit more mature here and there, and, you know, just kind of exposing me to, you know, life, you know, not all the sunshine and rainbows. So I think my parents did a pretty good job of preparing me for that. But I've learned that, you know, coming from high school and, you know, going to college, that, you know, you just have to grow. And if you want to be successful at an early age, you got to really prioritize when you can have fun with your friends and when it's time for business. So I'm still learning, but I think I've had a pretty good start so far.
It's been warm here, but I'm guessing a guy from Vegas is not complaining about the heat.
Yeah. Yesterday it was like 100 degrees and people were losing their minds out here, but it was that's pretty mellow for Vegas.
You're like, what's the big deal? I'll eat outside.
Yeah.
That people are like, it's crazy. I can't go outside.
Yeah.
It's so hot. I'm dizzy. We're a little bit weak when it comes to that kind of thing.
I'm pretty weak when it comes to cold weather, though, so I think you guys got me on that.
What's it like to grow up in Vegas with the Strip being there? And we all visit, but we don't know. What's it like a day-to-day thing, 15, 16, 17-year-old kid with all that going on?
Pretty simple. I don't do anything crazy. I rarely go to the Strip. That's kind of the touristy thing. And it's pretty crazy down there, so we kind of stay away from that. But, like, I just grew up in the suburbs and, you know, have a solid group of friends. And we just kind of find stuff to do, like, you know, when I was a kid, you know, I'd ride my bike, or I'd go, you know, swimming, or I'd just go mess around in the dirt behind the house, just normal stuff. And, you know, now it's just like going to movies, going out to eat, playing 2K, watching movies, just basically like living anywhere else.
Can you be normal when you're 7 feet tall, or does that kind of just walk in the room with you?
You just kind of have to duck a little bit more. And, I don't know what, you know, watch where you put your legs, because you might stretch and hit someone in the face and you won't even realize just because your limbs are so long. But besides that, it's all right.
Traveling on a plane's got to be a bitch.
Yeah, it's not fun at all. But part of the job.
I'm like 6'1", and I'll get on a plane and I'm complaining. I cannot imagine 7 feet. Like, you have
yeah.
Do you go to the counter and be like, hey, look at me, give me an exit row?
I try to do that as much as possible. And, you know, luckily now the planes will be pretty big moving on. So that I got lucky on that part.
Anybody coming with you? Family going to move here, or are you on your own?
I'm on my own for right now. I'm trying to figure out to see if someone can come live with me, like one of my friends or something, but we'll see.
Oh, that would be insane to be your friend and just be hanging out playing video games and watching you play basketball. Zach Collins is with us, number 10 overall pick. The other guy, Caleb Swanigan, what'd you know about him before becoming a teammate?
I didn't know too much, but I just kept hearing his name, you know, all season, you know, with college athletics. And, you know, obviously he's a great player and he put up great numbers this year. And I got to watch him a little bit, but, you know, I guess he had a pretty rough, you know, upbringing, or, you know, something happened, you know, in his past. You know, people always commend him for how he handled that and stuff. So that's pretty much all I know about him. Obviously, he's a great player. He's a dog, so he'll be a good addition for the Blazers.
I look at him and I understand where his competitiveness comes from. He looks like he's had to scrap for everything. His story is amazing. And then I see the way you play. You have that same scrappiness. Where does that come from in Zach Collins?
I don't know. It just kind of comes from, you know, growing up and, you know, always people kind of having low expectations for you. And just me always kind of wanting to prove people wrong. And I always kind of tell myself, you know, why can't I be this good, or why can't I be that guy and stuff like that. And that's just kind of, it's always been driving me. And, you know, I think that my mom put a good mindset, you know, for me, like just to, you know, take what's yours, take, you know, it's okay to be that guy. It's okay to, you know, work hard and be better than the other guys, take pride in who you are. So that's just kind of how I was raised, and it shows itself on the court.
It's kind of a rude question, but how much do you weigh?
Right now, probably like 234, 235.
What do you need to weigh?
It's a great question. I don't know, maybe like, I think my playing weight should be, you know, over 240.
Yeah, I don't want to see you at like 260. Like, you know.
Yeah, me neither.
I know, but when Greg Oden got here, he gained a lot of weight. And I know that, like, there's a temptation to do that. Strength is one thing, but weight just for the sake of weight doesn't feel like a good thing for you. You're very I like your feet most of all.
Right. Yeah. No, I definitely don't want to put on, you know, just weight and lose, you know, the agility and stuff. So, and I'm pretty sure, you know, Portland will have a great plan for me to put on weight, but, you know, good weight.
I'm 202, but I need to be 198.
I feel you.
You know,
I think I need to
play. See, if I need to lose weight, all I have to do is play basketball. I always wonder with a basketball player, what does a basketball player do to lose weight?
Right. Just play more, I guess. Play more basketball. Run more.
Yeah, get outside. We're talking to Zach Collins, the number 10 overall pick, newest Blazer. This team is now preaching this youth movement. You're obviously part of it. The responsibility that comes with that, when you look over at Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, you see these guys have a window in which they need to win. How fast can you guys matter?
I think kind of as fast as we need to. I think we need to, you know, control what we can. And I think for me and Caleb, we just got to stay in the gym and learn from those guys like Damian and CJ, and just be a sponge and try to learn from the vets that are here right now. And if we do that, I think we have a pretty good shot of you know, making an impact early.
All right. How different is this interview than the other ones you've done today? Is it all the same?
No one's asked me what my weight was yet, so it's been pretty different, this one.
Shaking it up. We get crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
We get crazy here on the show. All right. We'd love to have you back through summer league or whenever into next season. And my producer would love to have the ability to be like, Zach, could we get you on the show? Is that cool? Is that cool with you?
Hey man, I'm good. I'm just trying to make it in this league right now. So I'm going to do whatever I got to do.
All right. People are going to love you. They're going to love Caleb Swanigan because I think you guys can both play. And I'm a big, big believer in Zach Collins and Caleb Swanigan. So, and I'm not a homer. You're going to find that out, but
I
like what they did on draft day. All right, Zach, welcome to Portland.
Cool.
I'm going to ask people now what they think of you. So, if you want to tune in, you can listen. If you don't care, that's okay too.
All right, I'll probably bounce for that.
All right, Zach Collins, thank you, man. Great stuff. I like that kid. And there are a lot of people, I think, that wanted something a little splashier, I guess. I saw him in the Final Four, and I thought when he was on the court, Gonzaga was better. Yeah, they had the big guy, and they had great guards. But when Zach Collins was on the court, he was a problem. And I did not think the championship game was called in a way that was friendly for Zach Collins. But anybody who saw him play, and anybody who heard that interview, tell me what you think. First impression? Are you buying or selling the kid? 503-417-7575. Not Homer. I'm buying the kid. And I'm buying the idea that he is going to develop into a player that matters in Portland. And you heard Jerry Palm earlier. I thought the real surprise of today's show was not the guy calling in from Boise who had lost all sorts of sensibility over this sex offender issue. But I thought the surprise of the show was Jerry Palm from CBS Sports saying that Caleb Swanigan's a starter in the NBA. Think about that. Because I asked and I said on draft day, if the Blazers could get one player that could be a starter for them this next season, I think it would be a success. And they ended the day and I thought, well, maybe Zach Collins isn't a starter, but he's a guy who plays some minutes. Maybe he plays 15 or 17 minutes a game. And I thought to myself, gosh, because you see Yusuf Nurkic playing alongside both Caleb Swanigan and Zach Collins, I could. That's Terry Stotts' job, though. David on Twitter says, wow, 19 years old. Yeah, kid's pretty mature. I did think that was the best interview that he did since coming to Portland. I happen to be biased, but I did think asking him his weight and also the airplane stuff. Are you kidding me? Nobody else asked him about being on an airplane. Everybody asks the same questions. Talk about what it's going to be like. Talk about how you fit in this rotation. This show, you're going to get different stuff. I want to know what it's like to be a kid in Vegas. I want to know what you think of all the panty waists running around Portland complaining about the heat. Yeah. All the cheddar bobs out there who are going, oh, it's so hot. I'm going to call you in the dead of winter and be like, yeah, what are you complaining about now? I like the heat. I got off the plane yesterday in Portland and it just baked. And I went, oh, yeah, that's my kind of heat. Bring it, Portland. Just don't jump in the river. It's dirty and it's cold. But the heat is good for you. It's better. Sunshine is good for you. Great stuff with Zach Collins. If you missed any of that interview, we will podcast it on SoundCloud and iTunes. We will have him back frequently as a guest. I like that he's on a first-name basis with Gliss, the producer of the show. I like that they're in constant contact, and we'll do that with Caleb Swanigan as well. Again, I'm going to tease tomorrow's show. You all get mad at me when I take a vacation day. Tomorrow, I am off to New Orleans. The Associated Press Sports Editors Awards Ceremony is Thursday, and they have invited me to come on in and pick up an award that I won for the National Sports Columnist of the Year and to be part of their week-long festivities. I'm going to take them up on that and go to New Orleans for that. I will be back, but I'm not leaving you alone. Tomorrow, you're going to hear an interview I did with Lenny Wilkins, an interview I did with Randy Cross, former 49er, an interview I did with Bob Lilly, who was a delight and a surprise. Never had talked to him before, and Bob Lilly, just a great interview with him. Jim Otto, Hall of Famer and Pro Football Hall of Famer. Larry Fitzgerald Sr., Larry Fitzgerald's dad, is coming on the show, and Brad Stevens, the coach of the Boston Celtics. You'll hear all that on tomorrow's show. So I don't leave you high and dry. But yeah, you complain when I go on vacation if I get a guest host. Doesn't matter who it is. And I get good guest hosts. You complain. And you complain if I give you a best of. So what you're telling me is never leave. But just for a couple of weeks a year, I've got to go somewhere to keep my sanity. And so I'm going to New Orleans in search of it. And I'm sorry to leave you high and dry, but I will not leave you without great interviews. Friday's show especially is all the arguments we've ever had on the show. Chip Kelly, Sam Adams, Mike Gilbert, Joey Diaz. If you like me arguing with people, Friday's show. There's a theme every day. So if you're a golfer, you want to be around Thursday's show. If you're somebody who likes to hear arguments, Friday's show. Thursday's show's got Dr. Harry Edwards talking about second chances, and along with Ronda Rousey. That's a good show, too. So keep it locked in to the Bald Faced Truth radio show on the station that you're listening to. And I appreciate all of you out there. If you're looking for a mattress, I can also help you. See, I'm here for you. Mattress Firm. It's where you save money. It's where you sleep happy. Mattress Firm has its 4th of July sale on right now. You can walk into a Mattress Firm store and they can help you. They can find you a great mattress at a great price. And the savings for the 4th of July sale, you take advantage of that early on and you get a chance to get a great mattress that'll get you a great night of sleep. I know how important sleep is. I've got a bunch of kids. I work jobs, bunch of kids. When I hit the mattress, I need to say goodnight. And my mattress does that thanks to Mattress Firm. Mattress Firm has the sleep experts. It also has a sleep guarantee. If you're not satisfied, 120 days, you bring the mattress back. They will help you out. They're in it for you. Go to mattressfirm.com to see everything that I'm talking about, including their 0% APR financing for up to 60 months. So it's great mattresses, great prices, great financing. That's Mattress Firm. So get yourself out there and take advantage of that. All right, want you to leave it here. Got great programming in front of you. Special thanks to my producer, Gliss, Curtis Rogers, two first names, and worth both of them, and Adriana on the podcasting, Dustin, Kylie, and interns as well.